You're in a good place now. Relax, breathe, smile. You've entered into your element, the home of origin, the home of intelligence and beauty, where relevant topics are discussed, where what you think counts, and where superior is the norm. You are listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess.
We're going to draw some perspective. We're going to draw a road and some phone poles and a building going into the distance with some mountains and shadows and all that kind of stuff. We're going to do it really fast. You can't do perspective without a horizon that you're looking into the distance at.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. And on tonight's Perspectives, we're discussing why most of us tend to value what we have after it's already gone. When was the last time that you went to a funeral of a dear friend and saw how broken up their family was? You know, I realize we as people show love, we value others, but we do it to what? We do it to a point. We do it to a certain level. When was the last time you heard, "I'm sad, but I'm at peace with their death. I said everything I wanted to, and I said everything I needed before their passing"? I don't think I've ever heard that said out of anyone's mouth. You know, for the most part, I think we all have this unfinished business, the things left unsaid, the overall sadness that we waited. We thought we had forever. Instead, what there is no forever, we had till yesterday. You know, why is it that we as a race of people, for the most part, take our lives, the people in our lives, and everything in between for granted, with little thought until tragedy hits and we're left broken, not whole, and overwhelmed by the grief and sadness? Why is it that instead we can daily, hourly, by the minute realize what we truly have and give genuine, true thanks for all that we have? But you know what? We can talk about this all day. We can talk about not valuing what we have until it's gone. I'm sure you've heard many shows on that. But let's go a little bit deeper. On Perspectives, we have a tendency of going just a little bit deeper. Let's talk deeper about this in this discussion. You know, more than just taking things for granted. Why do we take things for granted? What is instilled within us, within the human being, that takes things for granted? What's the psychology behind our actions? And how do we begin to put a stop to it in our own life? So think about that. What is the psychology behind our actions of taking things for granted? And how do we begin to put a stop on it in our own life? Because I know a lot of times we sit there and say, "I gotta stop taking things for granted. I gotta enjoy the things in my life. I gotta say thanks. I gotta love, and I'm gonna kiss the kids on the forehead, and I'm gonna give hugs," and eventually that goes away and you forget about it and you get back in the rat race again, and there you are again. Bill, how you doing tonight?
Well, I'm just feeling happy and joyous and upbeat and cheerful, and you chose a great topic. You know, to feel cheerful tonight. Thanks, Ashley.
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
We can make death fun. Let's make death fun. Let's make it funny.
Let's laugh.
Put googly eyes on it.
We go straight from the funeral to comedy hour.
Put some googly eyes on it.
Why not?
Put some googly eyes. But, Eric, how you doing?
I'm laughing is how I'm doing. Let me put on my oxygen mask because I think you mentioned we're going deep into the human psyche. So let me go get an oxygen tank.
Yeah, scuba.
Yeah, so I can be prepared for the depths that we're about to embark upon.
There you go.
But I'm good tonight. Always a pleasure to be here. Always.
I am your father, Luke.
Luke. Deep within yourself.
Which, by the way, can't wait for the new Star Wars movie to come out.
I just saw the trailer. Did you see the trailer?
I did see the trailer.
I love the trailer, man.
Go online.
Go Google it.
And just do Star Wars trailer.
Did not see the new trailer, did we?
Didn't see new trailer, did not.
Lots of cool stuff. I can't wait. 2015, December.
What? 2015, baby.
Just in time, for the Christmas holidays, more loot to buy.
Until you get a bootleg copy from...
There you go. There you go. That's the... That'll be the most fun part about it, you know. Who owns the Star Wars things now? Isn't it Disney?
Is it Disney?
Somebody owns anyway, it. Whoever owns it now, it's
Lucas,
like
let's, Lucas.
Well, no, he sold.
Oh, he sold. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, Ash is looking at this, giving us evil eye here.
Sorry,
so,
as we digress. Sorry. Yes.
Death and dismemberment. Yeah. Star Wars.
Yeah.
The Death Star.
I was going to say.
It all goes together.
It all does go together. Yeah. You know, the lightsaber, he's died. We're at the funeral. But, you know, we didn't quite get to say everything we wanted to say to him. You know, I was saying before the show, Ashley, you know, I actually hadn't thought about that until you brought the subject up.
Really?
I've never heard or thought that, okay, you know what? Said everything I needed to say. You know, Godspeed and good luck. There hasn't been a lot of people in my life who have died, but there's been a few, you know, recently in the past, few years or
Keep
so.
Keep living and you'll encounter death.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, death is just
That's
as much
straight
as,
up on that one.
Yeah. Death
Unless
is as much as part
on
of
a
life
mountain somewhere by yourself.
Yeah. Death is as part of, is a part death. Of life, you know? Yeah. So, you know, it was just one of those things that, and we'll get into it more as we go along the show, actually, but yeah, you know, especially this one, close family member. You know, I didn't really, you know, we didn't outright say, okay, I love you. And, you know, I appreciate you being around life and all that good stuff. And I wish I had the opportunity.
Wow.
That's
wow.
hard. Isn't that yeah. hard?
It is.
I mean, because you don't say everything and you leave it unsaid. And then when the time comes, I mean, how did you feel?
Well, I felt guilty, you know, like I kind of felt like a coward. To be honest with you, you know,
why?
I was just, well, I mean, cause okay, I'll just, give you the background. It was when my grandfather died a few years ago. And, you know, he just came from that generation, you know, raised in rural West Texas, you know, man's man, you know, he fixed the cars, fixed the, you know, anything around the house.
Strong silent.
He definitely was a strong silent yeah. guy. I mean, you know, the John Wayne lookalike straight out of Central Casting. Okay. And he just came from a generation where, you know, men did not share those emotions. I know he loved me and he knew that I loved him, but it was inappropriate to say it. And he also wasn't
inappropriate or uncomfortable.
Both.
Yeah.
It was inappropriate because it was uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And he also
That's
wasn't
deep.
Yeah, that is deep. And yeah. he wow. was also, he wasn't the touchy feely type. You know, I mean, you know, for little children, you know, it's one thing for granddad to give you a hug. But once you got to a certain age, I mean, you know, men just didn't, you know, touch yeah, each other yeah. like that. And so, you know, but I remember when he was in hospice and you know, his mind was rapidly going. And, you know, I kept telling myself, you know, I better, you know, I'd like to tell him one time, you know, while he's still got at least some of his faculties, that I love him and that I appreciate everything he did. And I just couldn't bring myself to do it because I knew it would make him feel uncomfortable.
What, was it more him feeling uncomfortable or you?
Both. I mean, because, you know, it's one of those things, again, it was unsaid. We both knew yeah. it.
So why did you feel bad then if you both knew it?
Because I think I still should have done it anyway. And yeah. thinking back on it, I think that he, you know, he would have, because he knew he was going to die. He knew it. And, you know, before he just completely lost his faculties. So he knew what was about to happen and we all did,
right?
You know, that's why you're in hospice, right? So
you figured you wish you would have could go back in time basically and say it.
Yes.
Cause there was nothing to lose really.
Regardless of how he responded, but it was,
but see, here's the thing. I mean, at that point, how do I know how he would have responded?
At that point, it maybe doesn't matter.
You know, I mean, maybe he would have said, you know, I mean, like he would have like, okay, this is the time to, you know, say all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think sometimes, you know, a lot of times people go, well, how should I react? How should I respond? And you're right. I think it's about the living in that situation. And I know that sounds weird because everybody thinks it's, you know, it's about the people that are about to die. But I think the people that are living have more to take on when they don't say something.
Oh, I've always been of the opinion, Ashley, funerals are all for the living.
Oh, yeah.
The dead person doesn't care.
Yeah, know? Well, yeah. I mean, they might sit there and look down and be like, man, I thought I'd have more people there.
Unless you're James Brown. He stayed in the house for like 2 months after he died.
Hit me three times. Yeah.
Hit me three times.
I'm still here.
No, that's a good point, Bill. It's funny. My pastor at church, he always talks about funerals, and you know that's a tough job, man. Men of the cloth, regardless if you're Christian or Jewish or Muslim or whatever faith that you follow, leading people in a spiritual journey is quite a job. And he makes fun about it, not in a disrespectful way, but he always says he always can tell the person that didn't have a good relationship with the person who's deceased, because they're the one jumping on the casket, trying to almost jumping into the grave site, you know, trying to scream and holler to let them know how much they love them. And that's a sure sign that you didn't live a good life with that person. And so now that they're gone, you're the one, to your point, you're the one carrying on the anxiety and stress as that person is gone now.
Or if they got a hammer and nail and they're putting, that's probably a good sign that,
that's my uncle. I'm so sorry, uncle. I didn't mean to do it. I'm going to miss you so much.
That's funny.
I didn't kill you. I was at home with my wife.
It wasn't my crazy living to the grave. I love you.
Okay, so when we return, we're going to be talking more about why we do this. You know, I mean, it's not just about taking life for granted. It's not just about taking other people for granted. But why do we psychologically do this? What's within us as humans that do that? So stay tuned, because Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back in. We'll be back in two shakes.
Turn it up and jump in the deep end on Perspectives with Ashley Burgess. The water's warm and there's a swim-up bar. Glass of Perspective, anyone? Now, here's Ashley.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. And on tonight's show, we're discussing why most of us tend to value what we have after it's already gone. You know, even going a step further, you know, because, you know, Perspectives, we have a tendency of going that proverbial step further. You know, why is it? What is within us? What's the psychology behind our actions of really just not thinking about things until they're gone? I mean, what is it about the human condition that we have that tendency of not valuing things until they're gone? I don't understand it. You know, Bill, you made a good point earlier. I like that, inappropriateness because it was uncomfortable. That is profound.
Very much.
I hadn't thought
every
about
now
that.
And then I can come up with
it. This is a good one. That was a good one.
Every now and then.
Yeah, this is a good one. So why is it, you know, so let's talk about, I know that in America, you know, I don't know.
And that is an important qualifier, by the way. Go ahead.
In America?
Yeah, because our society, our culture is just so different from everywhere else.
A little bit different.
Because I think we are a society that doesn't deal well with death. I think death scares most of us in the sense of, where are we going to go? Where are we going? You know, why do we go? And for how long do we go there? Think about it. Death has all these questions. Like, you never know. Like, where are you going? How long are you going to go for? You know, do you come back? Do you do this? Do you do that? What's happening here? Where do I go? And I think because death is such this question, like, there's not anybody that's really gone and come back and said, hey, by the way, Eric, you know what? when you get there, take a right and then take a left, and then there's going to be a fountain on the left there, and you're just going to jog it down about a half a mile.
And bring some sunglasses.
Bring some sunglasses and some sunscreen.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, actually, I'm going to make.
Yeah, you hope.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Really. No
versus
kidding.
Water, huh? Right?
Yeah. I'm going to make another attempt at being profound. Okay. Uh-oh, here we go.
Let me put my goggles on.
Let me stretch. let me stretch here.
Let's go deeper.
Take a deep breath. Okay. Because, you know, as you know, I'm somewhat of an amateur historian. I think that in regards to America, anyway, it has to do with our Protestant Puritan heritage.
Yeah, I agree.
Which, you know, even in this day and age, America has not totally rid itself of its Puritan heritage, which is not necessarily a bad thing. Yeah. You know, I think there are positive, you know, Puritanism, you know, tends to get a, you know, bad name, you know, especially in this day and age. There are certain positive aspects to it, I think.
Right.
But I think that and what I'm getting at is that there was a fear of death because you've done, you know, it's kind of the Calvinistic, you know, like I said, Puritan, viewpoint from that. You had done so much evil in this world that, you know, you're just going to burn in hell. You know, if you, you know, read some of the
that's scary
the early American writers, you know, like Cotton Mather and some of the authors from the Great Awakening of the 17th century, all their sermons, all their writings are all about, sinners in the hands of an angry God. You know, God was angry and he's going to punish mankind.
God was angry that day.
We're going to burn in hell, you know. And, to this day, a lot of, American Protestant churches, and we're still largely a Protestant country, religion-wise, there's still that backdrop to it, the emphasis is on, how God is going to punish us. And so I think that's gradually seeped into the American psyche as a whole.
You know, that's interesting that you said that, because I was at a funeral recently a few weeks ago, and the person was really young. I mean, pretty young, you know?
Sad.
And the sermon, the guy came up and started saying the sermon, and I don't remember how many times he said, God-fearing. You're supposed to, God-fearing.
Fear God, yes.
And I'm like, whoa, what's this fearing God thing? I'm
that's
over
a
here.
Very Protestant, Calvinistic concept.
Very Protestant.
It's awful. I think it's absolutely awful. I mean, you're supposed to fear God. I mean, like, that doesn't make any sense to me.
Full disclosure, I'm a Protestant.
Yeah, no, it's all good. It takes a Protestant.
I don't believe in any sort of organized religion whatsoever.
It takes a Protestant to speak authentically about Protestant experience, I would
imagine.
Right,
exactly. But, I mean, Ashley brings up a good point.
Honestly.
I mean, she doesn't believe in organized religion. That's great. I mean, certainly here in America, you're not required to. But I think even if you don't believe in any particular religion, or maybe you believe in a non-Christian, religion or deity or whatever, still living here in America, growing up in America, being surrounded by the culture, I think that seeps into your psyche.
And it's funny, I always love it when you bring up the Protestant angle, Bill. And, when you go to the ancient African concept of God, it was about celebrating and honoring God. There was no fear in it. And, to your point about death and all of that, those societies and even the ancient African Egyptian society as well, it was about God, but it was also about your ancestors. It was about living right on earth,
right?
Because you would have to be held accountable when you transitioned to your ancestors. And so there was a respect involved, and there was a circular understanding of life. So and there was an understanding that the actions and the things that you did while you were on the earth impacted where you would transition to in the afterlife. And I think we've kind of lost sight of that. And I get the whole fear thing, but if you flip it, it's more so about a responsibility and living right here. Then, I'm more of that side, because the whole fear thing is, it's constricting to me, and it's not evolving to me. But I think the ancient Egyptians had it figured out, because they packed all their stuff with them when they were
there. You go. They put it in the casket.
Yeah,
with
the pharaohs. Yeah, man, they mummified themselves.
Unless you were a servant of the pharaoh, then
unless you were a servant,
the pharaoh went, then you went too.
Yeah, you're kind of out. They put food in there because it was going to be a long voyage to the other side. But death and life and all those things are things that we've struggled with, from our early beginnings. But I think it's something that, to me personally, I don't fear it. I don't think there's anything you should fear. I think if you live a well life, then you've got an opportunity to have an honorable death.
Real quickly, I don't fear death either. I'll be honest with you. I do fear not living a life worth living.
Bingo. There you go. That's what I fear.
I get what you're saying, but I think a lot of people out there fear death. I mean, they're scared of it. Oh, my gosh, what are you going to do?
I get it, yeah.
I mean, people are scared of it. Oh, God, what if something happens one day and you die, I mean,
yeah.
I mean, I get what you're saying, but I think that a lot of times we avoid thinking about death as much as humanly possible. I think it's the last thing on our mind. It's the one last thing. I think when you go to every funeral I've been to, everybody says, I can't believe that person died. How can this be? Why, God? Why? Why are they? Why have they passed? What kind of God would allow this to happen?
I can't believe they died now versus
right.
I can't believe they died.
You're right. I can't believe they died now.
Because we all know everyone is going to die at some point.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just like, oh my gosh. But why now? And unless someone has been sick for a really long time and you knew that, it was coming and, you can sort of, mentally prepare for it.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it also has to do with where you are in your life. I'm, a father with three kids and a wife. And so for me, it's not that I'm thinking about death. I'm thinking about you know, providing for them in the event that something happens to me. And it's funny, I've got my insurance physical tomorrow because I'm upping my insurance policy for my kids.
But, that's funny.
But where I am in my life, I have to consciously think about that. And maybe not necessarily death, but think about that next phase if I'm not here in their life.
Because, and actually, I was going to say, just real quickly, I think Eric just hit it. Because when you're confronted with death, and all of a sudden you're confronted with your own mortality, and I think that scares a lot of people.
I think it does, too. And let's go back to that one point y'all were talking about fear. And, you know, and I'm not sitting there saying I don't believe in this or that, but I am saying that I do think that fear is kind of like the lowest common denominator. It's like if people are really... If you're fearful of death because of the bad things you've done,
bingo.
I think that's kind of like that's the sucky end of it, honestly.
The sucky end of
it. I mean, it's like, how sucky are you that you're going around doing bad things and you're scared about going into the grave because you know that it might come back to get you? I mean, I guess that's the least from my thought process. I mean, I'm living my life. You know, I'm living life clean. Let's put it that way. I'm clean living, right? I'm doing what's right. I'm doing the right thing. I'm doing right by everybody. And it's not that I'm doing this because I'm scared of being, you know, burned at the stake or something like that. But it's because it's my nature. What's easiest. It goes the right way. It flows the right way. I feel good about it. And it rolls with me.
I think a lot of people are not necessarily scared of death itself. They're scared that they haven't been able to accomplish and experience all the things they want to do in life.
Well, I think that's what scares people about death. What if they die before they accomplish everything they want to do?
Yeah.
God bless.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know. I struggle with it. I mean, what is, and I get the accomplishment and all of that, but I'm kind of excited about that next level, whatever it might be. I'm one that believes I have a Christian understanding of life, but I'm also, you know, subscribe to a lot of other different perspectives and philosophies. And I'm kind of intrigued by what that next level might have for us, to be quite honest.
I might be intrigued, but I'm not standing in line for it. You know what I mean?
That's hilarious. Yeah.
I'm going to be late to my own funeral.
You've taken a number. Now serving number 121, Ashley Burgess.
I'll be like, no, mine was 1,235,000.
You're like Beetlejuice. You know,
I don't want to be in his shoes, though, either. That'd be awful. You're stuck there for the rest of eternity.
Oh, no.
Oh, my gosh. There's some hand and some body growing out of your head. No, I don't want to do that. You know, but when we return, we're going to be talking more about what we value and how to really realize when we're taking things for granted, but also why we do it. So stay tuned, because Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back in. We'll be back this time in two shakes.
This is Jake Busey, and you're listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess.
Since my baby left me.
No, you can't hit that note.
Since my baby left me.
Well, I found a new place to dwell.
That's all right.
Sounds raga. You don't want to go raga.
No, not this, it don't.
It does.
Since my baby
sounds barbershop.
Well, hey.
Barbershop raga.
Watch the
man. It's a new
husband.
Sorry. Oh, this is terribly depressing.
It really puts perspective on things, doesn't it?
Not too much. It's too much perspective now.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess, and on tonight's show, we're discussing why most of us tend to value what we have after it's long gone. Human conditioning 101. You know, we talked about right before the break, we as a society do not deal well with death. For the most part, I think that death scares a lot of us. And you know, Bill, you made a good point about how people might be scared to die based on the fact that they haven't accomplished what they want to do, or maybe they haven't fulfilled their true personal legacy.
The bucket list.
Well, the bucket list, the legacy.
By the way, a movie I saw. There you go. Congratulations to me.
I wasn't a big fan of that film.
I was. I liked it. I liked it a lot.
I'm not a big fan of the bucket list, though. It's like, what about the top wrong list? Not the before we kick the bucket list.
But I mean, it's
top wrong.
It's that
Morgan Freeman kind of
gallows, dark humor. I like that kind of humor.
No way.
I do. I mean, go figure.
Go figure. We've known each other for a while. Yeah, no, but let's talk about the funeral concept. Like, I was at a funeral recently, and you know how everybody talks about how life is so fragile? And funerals are interesting to me because when you're not in direct relative relation with the person that died, you know, it's really sad, right? But what is it? We rarely internalize the feeling for very long. So think about it. You're at the funeral. The funeral's over. You might cry as a woman. You might cry a little bit. And as women normally never have tissues, so you just sit there. And men usually just... you know, and you're constantly...
Or they're manning up, you know. I'm like...
You know, and they're constantly, like, tough. You know, smoothing their clothes, making sure everything's, you know...
Sure, clean. Sure. Adjusting their glasses.
Yeah. Adjusting your glasses, you know, kind of turn around, and you got a little misty-eyed. And you go and you talk to the wife or the husband of the person, you know, that's died, and you stand in line and you wait. And you go through that, and there's some time where you might get choked up. It might hit you right then. But it's interesting, once you leave, and maybe a few days later, it's not that big of a deal anymore, because it wasn't personal really to you. It might have been personal to a degree, but it's like you feel these feelings and you kind of let it go. And I think a lot of times before I go to a funeral, I always get like kind of like choked up like the whole week before, like just thinking about it. And I'm subconsciously thinking about it too, because it's funny. It's like I consciously don't want to deal with it, but subconsciously I'm in like a funky mood. Like, I'm kind of going through the motions, and everything has this undercurrent, you know? And I remember after this last funeral, I had to go to this party after. So later on the night, I had to go to this black tie event. And, you know, it is just people going crazy. They're partying, they're going crazy. And in the middle of it, I had to get up and go to the bathroom. I got choked up. And that was 6-7 hours after the funeral, I got choked up. Because I finally just sat with my emotions. Yeah. I got choked up. And it's like, you know, what is it that, I mean, just thinking about the emotional level that, I mean, and maybe death is a hard discussion for me. Maybe this is a very difficult discussion for me. It might be easier for y'all too. And maybe for our listeners, maybe it's not. Maybe it's harder just like it is for me. But this is one of those subjects that, to me, is a very difficult subject.
You're a very empathetic person. I mean, you're like really attuned to other people's feelings and emotions, where you take on the vibe in the room. I mean, I've seen you, like, a physical change come over you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And that's what I've been working on, to make sure I don't internalize that anymore. I know where it's coming from.
Like, seriously, you've got your tissue right now. I mean, I think you're kind of internalizing it.
No. I think she's just looking at this outfit I have on today, and it's bringing her to tears.
Probably. Cause,
bringing
cause,
me down.
Because she wished she could look as fine.
As suave.
As Mr.
As
Eric.
Debonair. As GQ.
That's right.
Yeah, no,
but
I'm not as GQ.
Here's... Let me try to answer your first question there, Ashley. You know, why do, you know, after a few days or whatever, you know, kind of, excuse me, out of sight, out of mind. I think it's a defense mechanism. And by the way, it doesn't even, not for people who, you know, maybe you're not a personal friend or relative of the deceased person. You know, I think close friends and family members do the same thing. You know, this is like out of sight, out of mind. It's a defense mechanism.
Defense or survival.
You don't want to feel bad.
Yeah.
Therefore... You know, it's, you know, what's the old saying? Denial's not a river in Egypt.
Mm.
Okay. I think it's kind of the same thing. Okay. You know, out of sight, out of mind. So I'm going on with my life. It's a survival technique.
And survival. Yeah. Survival as well. I think, you know, how much of that is part of our psychological DNA? Because when you look at us as early humans, death was everywhere. I mean, you leave your village and, you know, you get eaten by something. And so I think to some degree, we've developed a mechanism that allows us to compartmentalize. Now, it's a spectrum, but compartmentalize certain aspects of death. Obviously, if the person is closer to you, it may resonate a little bit longer. Obviously, if the person has more meaning in your life. But I think to some degree, it's a survival technique.
Well, Erica, I mean,
it hurts so deep. It has the potential to hurt so deeply.
It's the whole reason human beings invented funeral rites.
Yeah.
And I think it's a whole reason that we invented religion.
Part of it.
If you think about it, I mean, you know, because
to deal with that,
many religions, you know, have some aspect of it that deals with not only a creation myth, how we got here, what our purpose is, but also what happens when we pass on.
Thereafter, yeah.
And you know, I think one of the, and this is just my opinion.
That's interesting.
One of the real reasons that Christianity just spread like wildfire in the first centuries is that, you know, you didn't really die if you believe in, you know, Jesus Christ, the God-man.
Yeah.
You know, you were going to have everlasting life. But a lot of religions have, you know, Buddhism, of course, you know, has nirvana.
Sure.
You know, and Taoism and you know, some of the Eastern religions, you know, have some, you know, somewhat similar concepts. You don't really die. Or, you know, the ancient Egyptian religion that you mentioned earlier.
Uh-huh.
So we invented, you know, religions and funeral rites to deal with our emotions and our fear of death.
You know who I like as far as a modern culture is concerned, who I really kind of get into and am intrigued by when it comes to funerals is New Orleans. Have you ever been to a New Orleans funeral?
The party.
I haven't been to a funeral. I mean, yeah. I've seen them on TV, but yeah. But I know what you're talking about.
I've driven by one, and I thought it was a party, man. And I'm like,
with the umbrellas.
Yeah, with the umbrellas, and then all of a sudden you see the horse pulling the casket, and you realize it's a funeral. But it's interesting how they deal with it.
You know who has something similar to it? Sicily and Southern Italians?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah,
I'm part of Sicilian.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Are you going to make me an offer I can't refuse?
I'm going to give you the kiss of all kisses. No, I mean, but you know, I want to talk about too. I mean, that's cool to have a party, and I think it's the way you look at it, because I would hope that people were partying. I would hope there was an open bar.
Yeah, like the Irish have a wake. Go ahead, Ashley.
I would hope for an open bar. I'd hope for a buffet, a nice buffet, not a Caesar's Vegas buffet. I'm talking nice, like a spread.
Like a wake. You want a wake, like the Irish have.
Yeah, it's got to be something good, you know?
That's,
and I want, and because of the way I treat people, there's going to be a lot of people there.
I've actually told my friends and family this. I mean, you know, when I die, well, first of all, if I ever get to the point where...
death? No, I'm kidding.
Well, I mean, actually, no, actually, seriously, Eric, I've told them that if I get to the point where there's no hope of an improvement in the quality of life, you have my permission to take a 357...
Yeah.
Put it in the back of my skull.
My
pull the trigger.
I was just gonna say pull the plug. You're talking about lock and load.
I mean, I'm talking lock and load. Just
my name gonna be put on that one?
Pop a cap. I'm talking about pull a plug. No, you're talking about popping caps.
Pop the cap on me, brother. Yeah. And then don't even worry about a funeral. Just throw the carcass out on the
prairie.
Because buzzards have to eat too.
Yeah.
And
oh my god, Bill.
Take the money you would spend on a funeral and just go have a party.
You're my man.
And
I would get you a burlap sack. At least make it harder on the buzzards. Yeah, you know, don't give them just a free flow.
Buzzards are God's creatures, too.
Or
we'll
do
eat.
One like Tupac used to do. Pour one out for the homies that ain't here, you know?
There you go. There you go. You know? I mean,
he's still alive, I bet, too. Hi.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm sorry.
Go have a drink on me and laugh at all the, you know, stupid things I used to do.
Yeah.
Wow.
Now, death is fundamentally... human and fundamentally a part of living, and I've always been intrigued by it, not in a morbid, fearful kind of way, but just in an emotional human transformation kind of way. It's fascinating
but,
to me.
You know, I think you're kind of in the minority on that, Eric. I know.
I'm in the minority
people,
a lot of ways,
you know,
especially here in America.
I think most people are so afraid of death they don't even want to talk about it.
Yeah,
you know, out of sight, out of mind.
Death.
Yeah.
A lot of it for me, because I'm similar to Ashley, I feel things very deeply. And so that was one thing in particular, love and death. Those two things are things that I really had to wrap my head around if I was going to survive emotionally as a human being.
I agree with that. When we return, we're going to talk about more about dealing with the things that we value and about how to really value them while they're here, as well as just talking a little bit more about my emotional feelings from the last time I went to this funeral, because I think that it might shed some light into a lot of the reasons why we fear death. So stay tuned, because Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back in. We'll be back in two shakes.
I can lift you up. I can show you what you want to see and take you where you want to be.
Get in here and give us your perspective. We're listening. You're listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. And on tonight's show, we're discussing not valuing what we have until it's gone. But more, we're going deeper into the human condition of why we actually psychologically take things for granted.
And, you know, Ashley, real quickly, before we get too further into this, you know, we got listeners online on Facebook and Twitter. I would love to know what our listeners think. About how we handle death.
We're on Perspectives with Ashley Burgess right now, as well as Ashley Burgess, and the handle for Twitter is at Ashley Burgess. So, yeah, you know, the last funeral I went to, I mean, to be honest with you, it was a good friend of mine. And, you know, I actually, after the funeral, you know, I got mad. And what's interesting is, you know, there were two guys that got up and stood up there and, you know, and talked about the deceased, because they were really good friends, right? And they've been friends since, like, they were children. And some of the stuff that each guy talked about, I was like, really? that's him? He did that?
Wow.
And then I kind of started getting angry because I felt like there were parts of him that I didn't know at all. Okay? Like, really? And then I got mad because I was thinking there were many times when I tried to put myself out there to hang out, right? And it is what it is, and he was married to a friend of mine. But a lot of times it seemed like it was difficult to get together. It was difficult to create, you know, time to hang out. And I felt like I kind of got screwed out of really getting to know this person. And as I listened more and more to the things that these two men were saying at the funeral, parts of me thought, okay, I did know him, and parts of me felt like I didn't know him. And to be honest with you, I didn't like that feeling. I mean, I was thinking, wait a second.
Were deprived of something.
Yeah. And it's like, I think that if you really look at life across the board, I think you'd probably have to say that about everyone to a degree. And I didn't like the feeling of thinking, this person did this, this person did that. I had no idea that was part of that person's, you know, MO. And if I would have known that, we could have even been closer friends. But I felt like I kind of got cheated, quite honestly. And I felt like I had put a lot of, you know, time and effort to try to spend time. But it was also an interesting feeling because there was a lot of times when I felt like I tried to connect, but they wouldn't connect. And then I started thinking, was it my fault for not connecting? Did I not put it all out there? Could we have been closer friends? And then it just kind of started just bothering me.
Yeah, Ashley, I mean, I get that. But, you know, in each relationship we have, I think, you know, one of the things that we come to understand is that we only represent a small slice of that person's life, you know, and I get the anger and all of that. But does that have to do more with you than the other person, though, when you really unpeel the onion on that?
I felt like I didn't get to know the whole person.
Yeah.
And I feel like there was a lot of things that were kept from me.
But do you ever get to know the whole person in any relationship?
Even if you're married to someone.
Yeah, really get to know the whole person?
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
I think if you're intimate with that person and you actually spend time with, I think you get to know most of them.
I mean, I was going to say, you know, maybe what, 95%, 97%?
Probably,
you know,
about 80%,
whatever.
To be quite honest. Yeah.
But yeah. I mean, I think Eric makes a good point. I know that, you know, like, for example, with my siblings, okay, the people who, you know, have known me the longest and, you know me the best, right? There are certain aspects of my life that I don't necessarily share with them. Not many, but if I were to die today and somebody's doing the eulogy, they'll probably find out a couple things about me that they didn't know.
Same thing with me. I had a teammate that passed
Bill's
away.
Bill's a criminal, by the way.
Yeah. Bill used to be Billetta.
No, right. Yeah, I'm kidding. It's my double life.
I'm kidding. But I had a teammate. It was one of my first teammates from college when I was maybe 27, 28. And he was a wonderful fellow. We called him CP. And he was from Moss Point, Mississippi. And CP always had a wonderful smile on his face. And CP was about 5'9", but he could run like a bunny rabbit in an open field. And we had a great relationship because he always had a wonderful smile. And we would go at each other in practice, because he was a receiver and I was a defensive back. And when I learned that he died, my feeling was that I remembered and mourned over the relationship that he and I had, him as my teammate, the guy that was always smiling. Now, I understood that he was probably a son, a father, a brother, and friend to others. And so I just kept in my heart the memories that we had and what I was able to get from that relationship. And that was enough for me to shed some tears and remember those good moments. Again, realizing that he had other layers of his life that I probably wasn't privy to, but the layer that I had access to was one that I cherish even today.
See, I like where you're going with that, but you know, every other funeral I've been to, I've understood. When people have stood up there, I got all the inside jokes. I understood what was going on. And I guess maybe I just felt like on that particular one, I felt a little cheated.
Yeah.
Because really, honestly, at every other funeral I've ever been to, and I've been to several. Okay, I'm not like the Black Widow or anything over here, but I've been to a lot of them. You know?
You haven't been to mine yet, have you, Ashley?
I was going
to
say.
Okay.
I've seen it in my mind's eye. No, I haven't been.
That's
no,
funny.
But think about it. I mean, like, I've been to a lot of them. And it's always been like I knew the family and everybody knows me.
Yeah.
and all the stories I remembered, you know, and some of them I was even involved in, you know.
But I think it's because, I mean, you have a far larger social circle than even than most people
than
do,
most
actually.
Human beings.
You know, you do. I mean, you know more people, therefore you go to more funerals.
I have.
You also go to more baby showers and, you know, more births.
Yeah, true. You're right. You're right about that. I have a friend of mine, though. I think I've told
life
you about
of
this
a celebrity.
Uh-huh.
This friend of mine, his first name is Paul. We won't add any more. But Paul knows a lot of people. Like, Paul probably knows.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. Okay.
About the same amount or more. But see, Paul's a little older, right?
Mm.
And so Paul actually reads the obituaries every day.
He's at that age.
Well, yeah. No, he's not that old. He's just he's in his 50s.
Reads obituaries to make sure his name isn't in it.
No, yeah, exactly. I didn't say he was old. I just said he's at that age.
Yeah. Well, you want to see if your friends are gone,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
And he always calls me and be like, "There's so and so's funeral," and he actually likes funerals. Like, I mean, he likes them because he gets to see people, and I mean, it's not some sort of morbid, weird thing, but he likes funerals. Like, and he kind of talks about it in like a kind of a giddy voice, you know, yeah, not like a. We gotta go to so and so's funeral. Like, well, I'm gonna be at the funeral on Saturday about 11 o'clock.
My grandmother was like that. She'd put on her Sunday best, man, and I'm like, "Grandma, where are you going?" She said, "I'm going to the funeral, baby." And I was like, "That's odd," but I realize it as I've gotten older. It's a chance to connect with the living,
right?
And
right. Well, yeah, I mean, funerals are all about the living. But
yeah.
By the way, funny story. My granddad used to say first thing he would read when he woke up in the morning is the obituaries. If he didn't see his name in the obituaries, he'd get out of bed.
Oh, my God.
If you saw his name on the bridge, well, you know, no, he wasn't going to get out of bed that day. So,
if he saw his shadow, it'd be five more years.
Now you know why I get my dark humor, where I get my dark humor from. But anyway, yeah, I mean, you know, Eric, that's a perfect point, though.
Yeah, she put on her Sunday best, the hat and everything.
You know, first of all, I mean, you know, people used to, I mean, I guess we still do, but you dress up for funerals, first of all, to show respect. For the occasion, show respect for the deceased person.
And a shirt.
Yeah, usually not a good idea to. You know,
I don't feel like they care about what we're wearing,
even at redneck funerals. But that's the thing, though. Actually,
jeans and a shirt last time.
That's the thing. The dead person doesn't care, but all the other living people who are there for such a somber occasion. I mean, funerals don't happen on a daily basis, even for you.
You know what's interesting to that point, and sometimes I'm a watcher. In case you guys hadn't figured it out, I just sit and watch, and one of the animals that I love is the panther, because the panther just sits in the tree and watches everything till he gets hungry, and then he eats and then goes back to the tree. But my wife recently went to a funeral, and the person was very young. They all went to high school together. And as she was telling me the stories about the funeral, but more so about the gatherings outside of the funeral, I've got a caption in my head as I was trying to visualize it. And the caption basically reads, here's the conversation between the people that are alive. Man, I'm so glad that I'm not the one dead. Aren't you? Me too. We're still alive. Aren't we glad we're alive? Yeah, we're glad we're alive. Oh, we miss Johnny. Yeah, we miss him. But aren't we glad we're alive?
Let's have another drink to the
let's
being
have
alive.
Another, yeah, let's have another drink
not
to
too much, though, but just enough.
Yeah, you want to go eat? Yeah, let's go eat and be alive.
A toast to being alive.
To being alive, you know. So, but that's kind of a small way to do it. But, I mean, at the end of the day, psychologically, I think that's a part of it. You know, we're happy to be alive, even though the person that we at least knew or loved is gone.
And, you know, and Ashley, maybe we can get into this a little bit more in the second hour. Maybe that there's survivor's guilt.
Yeah.
The living people, you know, and maybe that's why some people react the way they do.
Oh, that's a good comment. I like that. That's a really good
survivor's
thought.
Survivor's guilt.
Next on NBC. The next show.
That could be a nice
Are
reality show. Yeah, it could be a nice reality show.
Oh, good
you got
God.
That, you got the person up there going, when are my friends going to die? I'm bored up here. God bless. Come on, man. This is a hard audience here. You know, but hey, when we return, we're talking about more about valuing life, more about valuing our life, and then more about the human psyche and why we do what we do. So stay tuned, because Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back in. We'll be back in two shakes.
You're in a good place now. Relax, breathe, smile. You've entered into your element, the home of origin, the home of intelligence and beauty, where relevant topics are discussed, where what you think counts, and where superior is the norm. You are listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess.
I like Perspectives with Ashley Burgess, but I prohibit my workers from listening to it.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. And on tonight's show, we're discussing taking people for granted, dealing with death. What is the psychology behind the fact of us humans taking things for granted? It's like the concept of, you know, we're not even interested. We're not sad until it's gone. You know, and earlier we've been talking about death and dealing with society and how we as a society do not like death. We're actually scared of death, and I can kind of agree with that to some degree. So let's talk about the why. Why psychologically we take things for granted. Because I think that's important. I think the first thing we have to deal with is something that's just easily talked about. It's rudimental, actually. Is that we really do have short attention spans, I believe. I believe we as humans see things kind of what's in front of us, what's right in front of us. And that's the way we work. What's right in front of us? We don't really think about the peripherals. Anything that has great emotion, we kind of like push under the rug. You know, emotional things are things that we kind of try to avoid. I mean, we can see that on a day-to-day basis when people are dealing with divorce, when people are dealing with death, when people are dealing with certain different issues. Even marriage, it's hard for people to wrap their brain around the emotional level of certain things. And I think that short attention span is a big deal. But I also think it's our inability to deal with the real issues.
I'm sorry, what were we talking about again?
Yeah, you lost me, Ashley. I was focusing on something else. Sorry. Yeah.
Sorry about that.
Sorry, you were going a little bit too deep.
I like that. The inability to deal with the real issues.
Tippy waitress, folks. I'll be here all week.
Hey, there's Vegas, baby, Vegas.
There's inability all in this studio tonight.
there is. But yeah.
Inability to deal with the real emotions.
I don't want to talk about it.
I don't want to talk about it. But no, actually, I think I come back to the concept of if it's a evolutionary survival technique, okay? In order to, you know, get by in life, you know, when human beings were first on the earth, and yes, I'm going to ignore you wearing Eric's glasses. you're trying to, you know, mess with me here. But you had to live in the present in order to, you know, make it to the next day.
Yep.
All right. And that evolutionary trait is still with us, I think. And it's kind of the concept of you don't see the forest for the trees. That tree is, you know, taking up your whole vision. It's, you know, right in front of you. That's what you got to deal with. And I think we all get caught up in, you know, just our regular lives, you know, get up, go to work, take the kids to soccer practice, what's who's going to win Dancing with the Stars. You know, all the important stuff in life, you know, wink, wink.
Yeah.
So thinking about real heady, deep concepts like death, you know, especially when it's not imminent, okay, then, you know, that's asking a lot of people, I think.
You know, it's probably like, I look at a lot of shows, nature shows in Africa and the Serengeti. So if I'm a wildebeest and I'm constantly worried about thinking about dying, then I'm not going to be living if I'm constantly worried about getting eaten, right? But a certain part of you has to be cognizant of it if you're the wildebeest, because being eaten is a possibility.
Ain't that what the ladies at the bar call you? The wildebeest?
No, they call me the cheetah, baby. They call me the cheetah, baby.
Fast, yeah.
Lean and mean.
There you go.
Lean and mean machine.
That's funny.
Lean, mean, loving machine.
Eric, I mean...
Mean and mean carnivorous.
Carnivorous.
But... Okay, so let's talk about this. You know how, like, when people say we're having a funeral, right? I had to just beeline this to another comment here, but we're going to move fast around this. Move fast.
Because we're losing our attention span here.
Walk softly, move fast. The whole concept is a celebration of life, right? They go, well, it's not a funeral, it's a celebration of life. But my biggest deal is, why didn't we celebrate the life while they were still here?
They were living, yeah.
Like, well, why are we going to celebrate the life now when it's over?
Like you said, we take it for granted.
And here's my thing. I think on the galactic calendar of life, of just life in general.
Galactic calendar, I like that.
Yeah, I mean, we as human beings on the third rock from the sun, this shiny green and blue thing floating around.
The pale blue dot, like Carl Sagan used to say.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we're not even a second into life and what time is. And I think we as human beings are still in our infant stage of development collectively. I think there are certain levels that we still need to get to as a collective people. A few people are more accelerated than others, but I think we're just not there yet. I think about my kids and I think about other kids that I'm around. You try to talk to an elementary school about quantum physics and quantum mechanics or something that their brain isn't ready to comprehend yet, then you're going to lose them and they're going to want to play video games or something. And I think that's how we are as a people. We're still evolving and we're not at that point yet to where we can comfortably coexist with the idea of death and transitioning to another place.
You know, Eric, I mean, you were talking about this during the break. You know, human beings are just not mature enough yet to effectively deal.
Collectively.
Deal with, concepts like death. And like I said, I think it's the whole reason why human beings came up with religions and philosophies and
ceremonies
and funeral rites in the first place. It's our
to deal with it.
You know, primitive way of trying to deal with things that really we just don't understand.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. If you're that primitive being back in the day, whatever, you know, whether you believe in evolution or not, whatever, but if you're early man and you're in a village or you're in a tribe or whatever, and then all of a sudden somebody's gone. And think about that. Just think about the first death as early human beings and how you dealt with that. That had to be devastating. That had to be devastating when you're in your small tribe and you're in the middle of Africa, you're in the middle of wherever you are, Asia, wherever, and then someone dies. Think about how devastating that is without context, without that religion that you're talking about, without a case study of how to deal with that. And that had to be devastating. And I think over the years in our DNA, it's gotten us to the point where we've, again, to your point, developed those systems to be able to deal with it.
Yeah, I mean, to this day, I mean, you know, the people who still live in the Stone Age, you know, people in the Amazon, people who live in Indonesia, New Guinea, who still live in the Stone Age, they have pretty elaborate funeral rites.
You're right, and to
deal with stuff like this.
Well, I see what you're saying. I do think it's probably the survival technique that we've created. You know, the survival, we're the survivors, you know, everybody says, we're a survivor, we're alive, you know, and I think it kind of goes back, though, which is interesting, to what Bill was saying in the first segment. It was inappropriate because it was uncomfortable. And I just think this goes back to a lot of that, because it just seems like we're so uncomfortable with what we don't know.
You know, actually, when I was growing up, it was always understood, you know, death and politics, those are two things you don't talk about at the dinner table, because it's inappropriate.
And I think that it's interesting how we are so scared of the unknown. And I think really that's what it boils down to, is that we just don't know what's out there. It's like the space. It's like, you know, before we went to space, we didn't know. Before we went to the moon, we didn't know. It was scary.
Before the Europeans left Europe, they didn't know.
the world
was flat.
I mean, the whole reason we call Native Americans Indians, which is politically incorrect, but
somebody was lost, right?
But because they were trying to find their way to India, they had no idea North America was there. You know, they thought they landed in India.
Yeah,
so they called them Indians.
It's amazing. It's amazing what we don't know. It's amazing how we try to forge through this life, and there's a lot of things that are left unsaid and left undone. And I think that's the biggest issue that we have with death, is that honestly, it's hard to put a finger on it, because there's so many infinite options, but I think that we put so many limitations on death. And I think that's the biggest thing. You know, so for example, when somebody says, there were so many things left unsaid, there were things that I wish I would have done, I can't get back that time, I can't ever tell this person how I felt. And I remember my dad even saying that when his father passed away, and he was supposed to go to the hospital, and his dad had a heart attack, and he was supposed to go to the hospital. He thought he was going to be okay, and my dad was so scared of going to hospitals. And he didn't make it up there, and he didn't tell him how much he loved him. And my dad always told each other how much they love him. And I said, why do you feel that, you know, years and years later, obviously a long time later, I said, Dad, why did you feel that you still have things that are left unsaid? He goes, because I never got to say it when he was alive. And I go, I don't understand why you can't say it now. I don't understand why we feel that death is so separate. It's like we feel like it's in a vacuum, that we can't ever touch it, that you can't ever access people that have passed. It's like we have mediums that make lots of money all over the world that talk to the dead, that they go to these auditoriums and they sell out thousands of seats, and people hope and pray that particular medium points out somebody that's their relative, and they're able to talk to their relative because they can't talk to their relative directly. However, this medium that's never met their relative can. And I feel that we put power in other people's hands that we really have. And I think that's the critical point behind why we really are scared to talk about death, but it's also difficult to deal with. So stay tuned. When we return, we're going to be talking more about this real issue of dealing with the unknown, as well as the ways that we can actually overcome, you know, basically not valuing things and realizing the psychological implication, but also change that in our daily life. So stay tuned, because Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back in. We'll be back in two shakes.
Turn it up and jump in the deep end on Perspectives with Ashley Burgess. The water's warm and there's a swim-up bar. Glass of perspective, anyone? Now, here's Ashley.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. And on tonight's show, we've been talking about taking things for granted, overcoming, stopping that, figuring out the psychological impact of why we humans tend to do it, but also the concept of death. You know, right before the break, I was talking about how a lot of times people get scared of death because they feel like it's just finite. It's done. It's finished. It's finito. There's nothing you can do. You can't speak to the dead. You can't communicate with the dead. It's done. You lost your chance. You know, kick yourself in the butt and go home. Feel bad, get depressed, and never get out of bed again. You got these people, you got these mediums, like John Edward, for example. There's a lot of them out there that make a lot of money on a yearly basis, that talk to the dead, that sell out, you know, huge arenas. And people hope and pray that he communicates with their dead grandmother and that they can actually communicate again. Why is it that we feel? Is it because we're so naive? Is it because we're so young? Why is it that we feel that we can't communicate? It's like we feel like we're stuck, like that's all there is. You know, that's all there is, folks.
That's all, folks.
That's it.
Right? And that's, so, that's how people feel. It's funny, when I was looking up John Edwards a second ago, I went on there and there's a Wikipedia, a WikiHow, how to talk to the dead.
On Wikipedia.
On 10 easy steps.
Good grief.
Yeah, well, we won't go into that tonight. But, you know, how do we deal with this? How do we deal with the fact that I think there's more to life than meets the eye? I think that a lot of times we take things for face value.
Well, you know, Ashley, I have said on previous shows that the greatest fear of human beings is the fear of the unknown. Okay. Which, by the way, for our listeners, if you want to listen to our previous shows, Ashley, they can go to?
You can go to ashleyburgess.com, and you know, you can also see the links on ashleyburgess.com. You can find the iTunes link for the podcast, which is cool, for Perspectives with Ashley Burgess, as well as you will see the Spreaker option, where you can put Spreaker, and you can also listen on Spreaker, which can also go through Facebook and other social media.
And Spreaker even has a handy-dandy little app.
It does. It has a great app that you can actually work through social media, so you don't even have to log in again.
So there you go. So so if you can go on Spreaker or iTunes,
shameless plug,
and ashleyburgess.com, and you can hear me talking about how the greatest fear of human beings is the fear of the unknown. So, Eric, since we don't know, you know, it's like my grandmother used to say, nobody's ever come back from dead to see what it was like, right? So we don't know,
haven't they,
what death is like. So I think that we have this inherent, not only fascination with it, but also this inherent fear of it, because, you know, there's this great divide. You know, you've heard people call it the great divide, right? Mm-hmm. So we can't, at least directly anyway, you know, communicate with people who are on the other side of the great divide, if there is one.
Until you call this guy, though, right?
Until you call this dude,
right? Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, our boy Keenan, okay, who's not here with us tonight, but so shout out to Keenan.
Keenan.
You know, he likes science, right? So he agrees with a lot of famous scientists, like, you know, Dr. Carl Sagan Neil deGrasse Tyson, and who am I thinking about? The guy in England who in the wheelchair. Can't speak.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
I'm sorry. His name escapes my memory for the second.
They just did a movie about him. Too,
the movie about it. Anyway, they claim that there is no God, there is no afterlife, and once you die, that's it. You know, life ceased to exist that moment. You don't go to the other side. You don't go to this great divide. You don't go to heaven, you know, whatever you want to call it.
Wow.
That's it.
But I kind of feel, to a degree, and this is one of my thought processes, I do know that in life, you know, what we focus on, we get. You know, and I know, like, if I sit there and I focus that I'm going to fail, If I know that if I focus, I'm going to do well, I'm going to do well. I might not get exactly what I'm thinking of, but I know that in my mind's eye, when I focus on something. So yeah, I mean, I think if you feel like you're going to go into just complete darkness when you die, I think you will.
If that's what you think.
I think whatever you pick, and you choose. And, you know, I think it's sad that a lot of people really do have a real immature thought process on life. I mean, if you look at energy and you look at the reasoning behind everything, you would have to sit there and believe and understand that there's more to this. There's a bigger, deeper story.
Yeah, and when you look at our universe, which is still expanding and still relatively young, especially the part of the universe that we know and understand, you realize that nothing in the universe really dies. Fundamentally, when you look at stars, the death of a star, well, when that star, quote unquote, dies, all of the materials of that star do what? They come together to create new stars, or they populate other planets with minerals and what have you. So I'm of the firm belief that anything that's ever been created never ceases to exist. It may cease to exist in a particular form, but it never fundamentally ceases to exist. So I'm intrigued by it all. I don't fear it as some do, but I'm wonderfully intrigued by the possibilities. So, and Stephen Hawking was the guy you were trying
That's it. Stephen Hawking. Yes. Good grief.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was funny. A long time ago, I wanted him and Arnold Schwarzenegger to run for president and vice president. I thought that'd be great, like brains and brawn. But now that you tell me that this guy believes this in the afterlife, I don't know, not so much.
Yeah.
I don't know, but you know.
But maybe even in all of his evolved intellect, that he hasn't ascended to that level yet of realizing that there is possibly something beyond.
Well,
and my thing's always been, what, you know, whether you believe in things or not, but what if God is a scientist? What if this creation is something that the Creator created scientifically for certain things to happen and certain outcomes to occur?
Well, and I've said this to Keenan, you know, before. Again, shout out to my boy Keenan. You know, if you believe that there is no afterlife, you know, you don't even have to believe in God. You don't have to believe in the Christian God, okay, you know, to believe in this, okay? If you believe that there is no deity, no afterlife, you know, and you know, once you die, that's it, you know, life ceases to exist, you close yourself off to certain scientific possibilities, you know?
I agree.
We don't understand the human soul. What makes us alive? Science still doesn't understand that. And it's possible, isn't it, that once we do understand that, then we will then discover a way to somehow, some way prolong that, past the point where the physical body ceases to, remain alive.
Well, I think that's already been done. I just think that our science is not going to figure that out. I mean, I think that we put, like, you know, it's almost like saying, okay, so like when I'm in, you know, when I deal with clients in therapy, a lot of times people like to use absolutes. I never do this. They always do that. You can't ever say they never and I all and they always, because they don't always and you don't always never do anything. That those are just two extremes. And I think when people don't understand something, they're so quick to give an extreme answer. Especially in, like, in couples therapy, for example. She never does that for me. She's always doing this. She's, you know, so always and never. That's like the whole concept of nothing else exists outside of this.
Well, it goes back to that adolescent, and it's not a negative thing, but it goes back to an adolescent understanding of the dynamics that you're dealing with. When you talk that way, that's based on a particular emotion, but also based on a more adolescent way of looking at a particular situation.
And I agree with you, because some people sit there and say, okay, some people say that we're in the third dimension, right? So some people say that Earth is third dimension. Some people say that there's 44 dimensions. It's been said that there's maybe 144 dimensions. Either way, you got maybe 41 or 141 left in change. So, I mean, if that's the case, this is infancy state. You're right. We are in the crawling state.
Yeah.
We are crawling. We're crawling. And I think a lot of times people try to grasp at straws, and sometimes the unknown is the coolest of all. And I think, again, that kind of goes back to the relation of why we take certain things for granted. Because I think that sometimes the things that we don't understand are the things that we avoid thinking about, because it hurts people's brains to think about it. You know, it hurts my mind to think about it, you know? I mean, and I think that's what it is. I think inherently we try to avoid things that we don't have a definite answer. But do we have a definite answer for anything? I mean, what is really reality?
Very few things.
And I don't think there's a definite answer to anything, because the universe, human beings, and life in and of itself is constantly evolving. It's constantly moving. It's constantly transitioning to something else. And nature tells us that. Spirituality tells us that. And our daily lives tell us that. We're not the same. We're born, and we're born in a physical body, and that body continues to grow, regenerate, and evolve until we die. Same thing with our psyche. Same thing with our soul. And so what's to say that that does not continue to occur at quote-unquote death?
And what's to say that that's not a new birth?
And what's to say that's not a new birth? Exactly.
And when we come back from the break, I mean, we can get into that, because a lot of religions and philosophies, that's exactly what they say.
Yeah.
So, yeah, when we return, we'll be talking more about that and more about how to deal with this and maybe how to embrace it better. Stay tuned, because Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, we'll be back in two shakes.
Jake Busey, and you're listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. And on tonight's show, we've been discussing dealing with death, dealing with the concept of how we psychologically compartmentalize things. We have a tendency of what? We have a tendency of just putting things off, not dealing with them, not valuing what we have until they're gone. And right before the break, we were talking about death. We're talking about how death of this lifetime, possibly, quite possibly, is a portal to another life. And I think it's interesting when you think about it. I mean, I think that there's certain aspects of the human condition. There's maybe one aspect of the human condition that doesn't die. I mean, I don't think that we sit there and go into another life, but I think we transform. And I do think that this life, this reality that we have created here on Earth, is both real and not real. It's about what we perceive and not always what reality is. But yet, it's a condition of eating and sleeping and living and that kind of sort of thing. And I think we've talked about this. It's almost like, you know, it's almost like you're in the crawling stage right here. And I think it's hard for us to deal with big issues. And I think death is one of those big issues of things that we are scared to explore. And we'll get to this later on. We'll get to this in the next segment. But we're scared to explore it because it makes us uncomfortable. So Bill, you know, we were talking about earlier, we were talking about this portal thing.
Yeah.
And I know you had some thought process on a religious background on this.
Well, yeah. I firmly believe that the reason Christianity in the first centuries A.D., or one of the main reasons anyway, that Christianity in the first centuries A.D. Spread like wildfire, and actually continues to spread like wildfire throughout the world. Christianity is the world's largest religion. And, I don't know if you didn't know this, Ashley, but actually Christianity is the fastest growing religion both in Africa and in Asia right now.
Really?
It's spreading like wildfire, you know, throughout Africa and Asia right now, in spite of, you know, certain countries, you know, attempts to stop it. But I think, you know, one of the main reasons is how it treats death. You know, it, Jesus Christ even said it, John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, and whosoever believeth in him shall not perish, but have everlasting life. That's one of Christianity's central messages to people. You will not actually die, even if your body dies. You will pass through the portal, and you will continue to live. And eventually, on judgment day, your soul and your body will reunite, and you'll live forever, you know, in the kingdom of heaven. I mean, think about that. What a powerful, positive message.
And you know? I think it's real. I mean, I believe in it. And I know a lot of people sit there and say they don't believe in that. But I believe in the fact that this isn't it, folks. It's not the end of things, folks.
Yeah.
I mean, this isn't it. I think for the most part, most people have an idea that it's not it. You might be scared to try to figure out what it is, but this isn't it. I mean, this isn't it. This isn't the big kahuna. This isn't this. This isn't the whole enchilada. There's still a lot to be had, I believe.
And it's important for me to say, I'm not proselytizing here. I don't want any of our listeners to misunderstand me here. I'm not, you know, preaching here because, you know, Buddhism, you know, famously has a very sophisticated concept of death, you know, and rebirth and what do they call it? I feel dumb right now. Anyway, you come back and you live several lives. Reincarnation. Thank you, golly. And you know,
doggone it, Bill.
I know. You know, the Chinese folk religion and Shinto, for example. You know, where you know that are based on ancestor worship, where you know the your ancestors are not truly dead. You know, you worship them and you know ask their advice. You know, for a lot of things. Mm-hmm. A lot of religions and philosophical systems have that concept of you don't really die. You continue living in some form, and I think that's comfort food. You know, it's mother's milk to human beings. You know, because we want to know and be comfortable with. You know, okay, maybe our bodies will die, but the essence of ourselves are still going to live on.
Well, I believe that taking things for granted is actually direct response to this whole thing about life. I think that the way that we deal with what's in our life is what happens on the next level. I really think this is one of the biggest lessons.
And that's a very
lessons.
Buddhist concept, by the way.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I think this is one of the biggest lessons we learn. I think this is one of the biggest deals that we have to go through. And I mean, it's one of the hardest things, too.
Yep, yep.
That's the whole, I may have said Buddhist, it might be Hindu, but anyway, it's the whole concept of karma.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it is actually Hindu, beg your pardon. It's like when you get reincarnated and live your next life, what you did in your previous life will affect what happens in your next life. You know, Christianity and Judaism and Islam, you know, the Abrahamic religions, you know, have the same concept. You know, how you lived your life here is how you'll be rewarded in the afterlife.
That's interesting. I mean, I think I can see how some people would say, oh, it's reward based on the fact that they want people to stay in line, stay in order, you know, not do things that are wrong. But I think to a degree also, though, I think the way you live your life is directly correlated to the way you'll live your life. I mean, you know, the way you live your life and the way you act towards other people and the way you treat people and the way you do what you do and your word, I think has to have some sort of implication. Whether it foretells your future, I don't know. I mean, that could be a way of keeping people under wraps, of having them do the right thing, of hoping they follow the law of doing things legally. On the flip-flop, I do feel that, you know, it's directly correlating to maybe a direction that you'll head. Or maybe it's all about your conscious living and how when we do wrong things, it's on our conscious, right?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it directly relates to how we'll deal with it. I mean, like, there's all kinds of stories in the newspaper every day about how somebody kills someone and gets off of it. They don't go to jail. They don't go death row. They have to go get rehab or something instead. They kill four or five people. They go to a rehab facility. You know, on that flip side, yeah, some people say they got off easy. But then you have to look later on down the road. Is that person going to suffer for the rest of their lives based on the fact that they know they killed four innocent people?
Physically, they might have gotten off easy, but psychologically, they could be in a prison that they could never escape from.
And exactly. I think more comforting to most people, they'll get their just rewards. You know, God will judge that person. You know, so and I think that's one of religion's, you know, another of religion's powerful messages. If you don't pay for it in the here and now, you're going to pay for it later, whether it's the Christian concept of you'll be condemned to hell, or say the Hindu / Buddhist concept of bad karma in your next life.
Yeah, the beauty of this is that this is a conversation. You can take an excerpt from this conversation that we're having tonight, and that you guys out there in the world are listening to. This exact conversation has probably happened millions of times throughout the history of human beings, and it's a very good conversation to have. And I think the one thing that this conversation tells us is that it's a journey, and it's a journey that no one has a definitive answer on, but it's a journey that brings a certain level of fear. It's a journey that brings a certain level of optimism. It's a journey that brings a certain level of comfort, but it's part of our journey as human beings. And I think that in and of itself is intriguing, very intriguing.
And I think it's interesting, too. I like what you just said. I think it's interesting, too, though, how if we are in the infancy stage, which I think we are, we're not going to be given anything that we can't handle. And I don't think that you kill anything off that's in its infancy stage. You don't kill off a child. I mean, you know what I'm saying. I mean, like, child's got to grow up and be something. It's got to learn things. It's got to grow older. It's got to get wiser. And I think we're in this learning process where we're just at the beginning. And I think there's a lot of naysayers and a lot of people out there that just want to say this is it because they think that we're bigger than everything else. They think that we're the smartest. We're the best.
Think that the universe orbits around us.
You know, we're
up our Uranus.
Up Uranus. You know, we're the gods of our own universe, many universes. I mean, you know, it's humanism run amok.
And so maybe this whole experience is something in place to humble us and put us in our correct positioning with everything else that's ever been created.
Yeah, I mean, I'm of the firm belief that even if you're, say, atheist or agnostic, which, you know, for the listeners, for those of you who are, okay, fine, you know, you believe what you want to believe, it still requires a leap of faith, I believe, to believe that there is no deity or no afterlife.
I don't know if it takes a leap of faith. I think you think it takes somebody that just doesn't. I mean, I'm not going to be a jerk here, but I am going to say, all in all, I mean, you got to think that there's got to be something bigger, because honestly, if we're the smartest people out there,
ooh, scary.
What's problematic?
I was going to say the surest sign that there's intelligent life out there is that they have stayed as far away,
avoided us
from us as possible.
We're not going towards that third rock. Those people are crazy.
It's like, beam me up, Scotty. There's no intelligent life here.
Or if they have. They've looked and they've looked from a distance.
And they run the other way.
Don't take that off, Rant.
They watch from a distance.
They're nuts. Don't take that off, Rant.
Think about the people watching you could have here looking on Earth. That'd be some extreme people watching.
It'd be quite entertaining. Maybe somebody's watching us do this show right now. Hey, those folks, they're kind of close.
Look, there's only 3 billion reality shows.
So if you don't hear us next week, folks, we've been beamed up.
Yep. I'm cool with that. I'm totally cool with that. I want to make some new friends, too. Anyway, stay tuned. When we return, we're going to actually be talking about how you can incorporate certain things in your daily life to stop taking things for granted, or at least to slow down taking things for granted, and things that are just day-to-day, you know, points that are important, things that you got to know to have a better life. And so we're going to share with you these things that you can do on a daily basis to make your life even that much better. Stay tuned, because Perspectives with your host, me, Ashley Burgess, will be back in two shakes. I can lift you up. I can
show you what you want to see and take you where you want to be. Get in here and give us your perspective. We're listening. You're listening to Perspectives with Ashley Burgess.
We're going to draw some perspective. We're going to draw a road and some phone poles and a building going into the distance with some mountains and shadows and all that kind of stuff. We're going to do it really fast. You can't do perspective without a horizon that you're looking into the distance at.
Welcome back live to Perspectives, and I'm your host, Ashley Burgess. And on tonight's show, we've been discussing how to deal with death, how to deal with the concept of what death is, how to deal with the things that make us uncomfortable, but better yet, how to not take things for granted, the things that we can do in our daily lives to help our life, to benefit our lives, and to stop, at least slow down, taking things for granted. You know, the first thing I think we need to do is, it goes back to our first segment, is you need to be willing to be uncomfortable. You know, Bill was talking about dealing with the uncomfortable things. And I think that in life, some of the most important things, some of the most profound situations we deal with in our life go back to dealing with what's uncomfortable, what we don't want to talk about, what's hard for us to put into words. Because I think the things when we deal with what's uncomfortable, it's not about words. It's about actual true feelings. And I think that the reason why we kind of put things off and not deal with people until after they've passed is because we're uncomfortable with dealing with the things we don't understand. And I think we have to be comfortable with the fact that we don't know everything. We don't have all the answers, and we never will. We might have a good idea, a good thought on life. But I think to sit there and make judgment calls and absolutes basically just shows our idiocracy, quite honestly.
Well, it certainly shows our immaturity, doesn't it? You know, like Eric was saying earlier in the show. And, you know, we still have, you know, a childlike adolescent way of dealing with these things. And, you know, I think you're absolutely right, Ashley. I mean, you know, it's okay, you know, to be uncomfortable, you know, if from the sense of, you know, explore the reasons why. And, you know, you don't have to necessarily compartmentalize it. So, you know, if someone close to you, you know, dies, okay, you know, of course you're going to feel bad about that. You know, grief
and you have a right to.
And regret, yeah. And, you know, a major portion of your life has been taken away from you. But don't keep that at arm's length. You know, real quickly, Ash, I'll tell you a story. My first exposure to death was when I was 8 years old. It was when my great grandfather died. Okay. And, you know, I can remember, you know, when he did pass away, you know, we went to the viewing at the funeral home. And, you know, I'd never seen anything like this before. Of course, you know, our instinct is to protect children, right? So, I mean, probably my parents and grandparents have protected me, you know, from something like this. But, you know, my great-grandfather was such a central part of the family's life. So I can remember him, you know, in his casket. And all of a sudden, my great-grandmother, I'll never forget this as long as I live. I mean, she just started bawling, just lost it, you know? I never seen, you know, I mean, you know, Granny Fish was just, you know, a rock, you know? And then all my other grandmother, too, started crying, you know? So all of a sudden, everybody around me is crying, and I'm just like, wow, you know? I mean, you know, of course, I'm only 8 years old, so I don't understand what's going on. So I'll finish this story up. I walk up to Gramps Fish, and he's there in his coffin. He's got his suit on, and I can remember feeling that it isn't really him.
Yeah,
you know, because he didn't look lifelike. And I can remember sticking my finger out, and I touched his cheek, mm-hmm. one of his wrinkles on his cheek,
cold.
And it felt cold and mm-hmm. wax like. So I just remember this feeling of just not understanding what's going on, but it made a profound effect on me because it was my first exposure to death, and I remember it this many years later.
Yeah, I had the same experience, and I came to realize, you know, it really wasn't him or them for me. It was just this body that the him lived in or occupied for X amount of years that they were on
yeah.
this earth, and that's what did it for me. And at a very young age, and I begin to see people not for the body that they're in, but the spirit that they radiate. And maybe that's just me. And that's what gives me great comfort in understanding or knowing that this isn't it. Okay, this is just a place that we're here to learn certain lessons, in my opinion. We're here to go through certain pain. We're here to evolve to another state, but this isn't it. Okay, and that's just how I deal with it. Others may have a different perspective, but that's how that helps me kind of get through this thing and helps me put it into context.
I like that, and I think also I like what you are talking about, because I don't believe that is the person. I believe that is the body that they were dealing with, and that, you know, a lot of people when they're dying, their body was breaking down already, and the spirit couldn't stick with the body that was falling apart. I think the next thing besides dealing with the uncomfortable is dealing with the fact that let's not celebrate life after it's gone. Let's celebrate it right now.
Amen.
You know what I'm saying?
I like it.
Let's start the party now. Let's not start the party when people are gone. You know, I mean, I think the thing is
I'm coming up, so better get this party started.
Get the party started. I mean, because, you know, I think that you kind of want to be late to your own funeral. And I think that people really need to start celebrating life. And when you got people in your life you love and you care about, show them, tell them.
Now, do it now. Don't wait. And you know, one of the things about religion, Bill, and we've talked about that, you know, extensively tonight is that, we're talking about death, but religion also teaches you how to, or at least puts in a particular context, how to live a fulfilling life while you're here. And we can't lose sight.
Because there's rewards awaiting
exactly.
you.
And we can't lose sight of that. And yeah, we're talking about death today. And yeah, death is a part of life. But man, there's a lot of joy here as well. There's a lot of growth here. There's a lot of relationships yet to be had. There's relationships that used to be had that bring a certain level of fun and entertainment and joy and love and all of this stuff to this experience. And so I want to make sure we don't lose sight of living a well life so we can hopefully face death with a certain level of honor and respect and reverence. So, yeah.
Well, and I think also the reason why I wanted to bring up this topic tonight is because, you know, if this is the worst we have to deal with, that there you go.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, you know, if you live your life fully and you do the right thing and you do what's right, I mean, you know, death is death. And I think death is just a movement into another dimension. I think it's a movement into another caliber of life. I think a higher caliber. I think a more distinctful caliber. And I think that this should be respected. But in the process, yes, living this life and not in a robotic style, not just going through the motions. I think a lot of people get stuck going through the motions because they want to keep all the emotional stuff at bay, and they want to basically eat, drink, sleep, and do the things that they can that don't take a lot of emotion. And I
that's not living.
It's not. I mean, a machine can do that just fine. I mean, you don't need a human taking up space doing that. And I think it goes right directly back to the concept of realizing that everything in life is temporary.
temporal, as they say in ancient ancient Egyptian religion, the Metuneter. They say it's temporal. So, yeah.
So don't get stuck on it. Don't sit there and look at things and say they're going to be forever and live based on the fact that, you know, I can't sit there and live on the fact that Bill and Eric's going to be in my life forever, that they're going to be alive forever. Yeah, it hurts me to think about the fact that something could happen to them. And it maybe stresses me out or upsets me to think about, but I'd rather be uncomfortable for a little while just to be able to understand what they mean to me versus the fact of never getting there and then the time coming toward me when I haven't dealt with it. And then all of a sudden I'm distraught, I'm flipping out, I'm freaking out. You know, you see somebody making a total, you know, crazy person of themselves at the celebration of life, you know. And I think you have to sit there and look at life and say, what is it that I want to get out of this life? The people around me, no matter how much they get on my nerves, because I know that people listening tonight say, you know, hey, I might take my spouse for granted sometimes because they're always around, but they're not always going to be around. And sometimes you have to just sit there and tell them how much you love them and care about them, realize what it's about. What is this life about? What are we doing here? What are we supposed to be learning here? I mean, and sometimes you don't need to learn anything. Sometimes you need to have a drink and have some fun. But at the same point, there comes a time when we have to be aware of the fact that it is temporary and not to get so stuck on it.
Yeah, and I think you can extend that concept to you know, your journey in life. You know, go back to the bucket list. You know, don't wait till you're you know, at the end of your life like Jack Nicholson and Morgan Freeman did in the movie. You know, start checking the things off your bucket list. You know,
that's
why
so
wait?
True. You know, I actually decided I've wanted to go to Vegas my whole life on New Year's Eve. I've thought about it, right? Well, guess what? I'm going to do it.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Why not?
Seriously, I thought it was dork. I thought it was an idiotic move. I thought it was an amateur move. But you know what?
That's what you want to do.
I decided I got to do it one time in my life. And I said, you know, might as well do it now. And why keep waiting? Why keep putting it off? Because I'll never do it.
You're lucky enough to have the means to do it and the opportunity to do it. So, you know, take advantage of it.
Go do it.
I agree. I wanted to, my bucket list thing coming up here is I wanted to do New York around Christmas time. Going to do it.
So there
you're
you go.
Do
go,
it.
Go see the Turing Washington Square Park and, you know, all that good stuff.
Yeah, going to do it. Why not? Why not?
By the way, I've got one request of you. Go into the new World Trade Center and tell me how long it takes to get all the way to the top.
Okay. I'll do it. Mm-hmm. I'll do it.
And we'll put that on a show live. We'll be here for
there
hours,
you go. Yes.
And hours and hours and hours. And Eric will actually just hang up the phone. He'll be, sorry, I went through a tunnel.
And maybe that's representative of our life. You start on the bottom floor, and then you ascend to the top.
Nice one. I like that.
Maybe that's a metaphor for what we've been talking about today.
Ascension here on Perspectives. Hey, great show, guys. I loved it. And Perspectives with Ashley Burgess will have a new show for you up next week. It's about ascension. It's about celebration of life. It's about doing what's uncomfortable, being uncomfortable, and getting out of this robotic self. Great show, guys. Perspectives with Ashley Burgess will be back. We'll be back in three shakes.